Welcome to the Sunday night There is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording and additional podcasts and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater and a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Welcome Judith S.P., a compulsive overeater from Maryland.
Hi, everyone. My name is Judith S.P., as Catherine just mentioned, from Maryland. And I'd like to take a moment to thank God pretty much for everything in my life, but particularly right now, for giving me the opportunity to share who I am, my experiences, and most importantly, my hope. So thank you, God. And God, please help me set aside everything I think I know and trust that you are all-knowing and will channel through me a connection with others in some way to enhance their recovery and or beginning, returning, or wherever they are in the process. But please know I'm doing my best under your love and guidance. And this is not really at all about me. So with that, I say amen. My voice is a little raspy. I'm not sick. I think God is helping me tone down a little bit and be more intentioned and slower. And I'm following his lead. And if there's time, I might share a little bit about how I think my voice came to be more subdued. I want to start off welcoming the new folks, those that are coming to this meeting for the first time, and for all or many of us who are a newcomer today. I feel like I'm a newcomer every day because I can easily slip off my program and my connection with God like that. And I've had many experiences, even with all the beauty and the gifts of this program, to forget and lose my conscious connection. So to have the opportunity to share with you today is giving me the opportunity to be close to my higher power and to reinforce, not just to say things that sound pretty good, but to know that I have to live them now, that I'm no longer a person who can throw her words around with, I'm sorry, or, you know, I don't know. I just need to take action with my words. I'd like to start off just referring a little bit to the Big Book, because this is where all the answers are. I don't have to buy or go to any other piece of literature. This instruction book has it all. And on the foreword to the first edition, the first word that embraced my heart was we, W-E. Up until the point that I really started understanding this program, it was all about me. Either I was isolated, or I was indignant, I was intimidating, I was ignoring. I was all eyeing myself all over the place, but never seeing myself. I just kept in the food, concerned or not concerned about my food behaviors, which for me is where the real deep infection lies. We have Alcoholics Anonymous, just like we have Overeaters Anonymous. I don't know how many we are, but we're definitely more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. The purpose of this book is to show other alcoholics precisely, not probably, not sort of kind of take what you want, like in a menu, take from A and B, but precisely how to have recovered is the main purpose of this book. And they hope, this was in 1939, that these pages, the words in these pages will prove so convincing that no further, that's strong too, no further authentication will be necessary. And the first, I never in my life would read editions, prefaces of books. And I take this one to heart when I'm working with other people and as I'm doing right now. I go right to the beginning. And there's so much wisdom and encouragement there. And I'm just going to hop for a couple moments to Dr. Silkworth's, the doctor's opinion. I'm not going to read very much, but in his first letter, the last sentence before he ultimately later on signed his name, that you, meaning me and you, may rely absolutely on anything they say about themselves. That also is very strong. This doctor is attesting to the value of what he himself had to surrender to, which was he was not able to help. I don't know if many doctors, and I'm not bashing doctors at all. They're wonderful human beings with a lot of value. But I have not come across a doctor in my many years of living who would say, I don't know. I want to, but I can't help you. So for me, that's a pretty strong recommendation, or even a stronger word than recommendation. And then Dr. Silkworth goes on in his second letter. After many years of experiences, he said there was a sense of real satisfaction when I was asked to contribute. And I'm going to paraphrase. He basically said, we doctors know that this is a problem, but we can't really do anything about it. And then he cited his experience with Bill W. And I will read this part. Many years ago, one of the leading contributors to this book, which was Bill W., came under our care. And while here, he acquired some ideas, which he put into practical application. After Bill experienced his spiritual aha, he requested the privilege of being allowed to tell his story to others. Again, I can't even imagine going to my doctor and saying, oh, you know, could you let me talk to the patient in the waiting room? I would just like to share some stuff about HIPAA and this thing and that thing, you know, confidentiality, whatever. It's okay because we've already got it here. But he requested the privilege of working with others, which is a major key in my recovery. It is more than essential for me to work pleasurably and honorably with others as soon as possible. Sharing at this meeting, I have some anxiety, but it's more, I hope I'm coming across in a valuable way, not I'm a terrible person and why are they asking me? Don't they see I'm not worth speaking? And the unselfishness of all of us, everybody in this organization, except for maybe a few people in higher up service, are doing this because they need to and they want to. It's totally unselfish. That is so counter to who I used to be. I thought I was a giving person, but underneath it all, everything was about me and what I can get from you. And if I couldn't get anything from you, I was blaming you, because it has nothing to do with this wonderful person talking to you right now. There's no profit motive. There's a community spirit. I heard a while ago, and I hear it repeated occasionally, that connection is 180 degrees from addiction. So for me to keep my addiction, which is a lot of food that is horrendous for my body, at bay, it is imperative that I take the medicine happily to be connected with other human beings. That's why God created all of us. Not to give me headaches because you're not doing what I want you to do, but so that I can feel that human connection. They believe in themselves. I do believe in myself. I understand myself better, and I realize that I have a lot of limitations. But around those limitations, my higher power, fellowship, literature, sponsoring, abstinence, food plan, writing, etc., the 9 tools, are here to help me. And they believe in themselves and still more in the power, which pulls chronic alcoholics back from the gates of hell, not hell, I'm sorry, gates of death. It's kind of the same to me. So with that said, I just would like to briefly share a little bit about me in terms of where I was. I think up until latency, 9, 10 years old, I was a pretty normal kid. I lived in Brooklyn, New York, went out with friends, played all day, came in at night, wasn't very happy in my home, but, you know, it was okay. And when I was about 7 or 8, my grandfather on my mother's side died, and my grandmother came to live with us. And then there was this huge triangle, like the Bermuda Triangle. It was my mother, an only child, devoted to her mother. And my father, who was a very loving man, could not tolerate my grandmother. So there was a lot of silence, a lot of tension. And I think it was around that time. Well, I know that's when food became my love and my comfort. And it stayed that way for many years, because not only was I unhappy at home and pretty much ignored, but that really wasn't very helpful to my self-esteem. So then I always compared myself to other people, and everybody else had what I didn't have. At least that's the way I perceived it. And so I would go to food on and on. And most of my life, I've been pretty unhappy. I was hospitalized for major depression when I was 29 and went to a wonderful facility in Maryland, which is how I came here. It was a long-term psychoanalytic facility. I was there for 1.5 years, which is unheard of today. And I came out of the depression, but my food and my unhappy spirit was never dealt with. It was always mental and emotional issues. And my weight, I'd say my heaviest was 50 pounds, greater than what I am now. And when I look back on pictures of myself, I say, why'd you think you were so fat? Well, part of that was I adopted my mother's body in me, and she was very overweight, struggled with eating, and died at 63, I believe, of this disease. And I very much adopted so many of her traits because I didn't know who I was. And she was the one I was around mostly. Fortunately, I had some loving experience with and from my father. But anyway, food was always my go-to. If I was out with people, I'd eat normally, but then I'd come home and I'd ravage, go through and like I was starving and never ate. I was a night eater. I'd get up in the middle of the night, semi-conscious. Either I was in the cabinet or the refrigerator. And the next morning I'd see the results. So, of course, the next morning I felt terrible. But I wasn't hungry. So I said, I've got this until about 5, 6 o'clock at night. And then I didn't have it. And this went on and on and on. I've been through many forms of therapy, Eastern philosophy, yoga retreats. I think they were all terrific. But nothing ever got to what was wrong with me. And in addition to Dr. Silkworth's explanation, which resonated with me about the allergy and the obsessive thinking, I came to understand that my spirit and soul were never developed or were damaged. I don't know what it was. I always believed in God, but it was more of, please, God, let me get a good grade on this test, and then I'll stop being mean to mom. Or, dear God, I hope that boy wants to be with me when I go to the party than my friend Toby or something. It was always contractual. Anyway, fast forward, I did go to college, I graduated. I sort of don't even remember anything about all of that. I was able to get jobs. But in 2014, I know I'm kind of jumping around, but I'm trying to share what I believe is relevant. No, 2012, I came into the rooms of a sister program. Because two of my children were struggling, and I thought I needed to be able to fix them. So I went to this program thinking I would learn how to fix them. Well, lo and behold, that's not what happened. They told me, no, you're here to fix you in relationship to them. And I went through the steps in that program. I'm not sure I had a spiritual awakening, but I sure felt better. Because I had tools to help me detach and not feel miserable 18 hours a day. But when I completed my steps there, I realized that there was a big elephant in the middle of the room. And that elephant, you probably can guess by now, was me. And I went, uh-oh, what am I going to do now? I know how to not run and do this for that person, but I don't know what to do for me. And somehow, I don't even remember, I knew about OA or something. I came into the rooms. I spent 7 years very much enjoying being here. Nice people like yourselves. I loved what I was hearing. And what people shared. And I loved the social element. This was a loving group. And I finally felt, wow, this is really nice. But I was kind of like skimming the surface. Like when I go on the computer and I surf one thing and then I'm off to something else. I didn't know what was going on. I did do the steps. I don't remember my inventory. Do not ask me to sponsor. I'm a mental health therapist. That's all I do. I can't help another person off hours. Service? I've got four kids, a household, da da da. Service and sponsorship? No. I'll come to the meetings. I might even be the timer on a good day, but that's about it. And then I'll leave. In the winter of 2021, I really was disgusted with myself because God had given me all these opportunities, hospitalization, different therapies, people who loved me in my community, beautiful books. I could give you all the wonderful things that were available, but I could care less. And I said, God, I can't stand it anymore. I can't yell one more yell. I can't be bitchy anymore. I mean, not ever again, but I need to tone this down. I just knew that I couldn't stand myself on an inside basis. I asked God, please help me. Please show me the way. And God showed me the way to vision, which I knew during those 7 years, but I would dial into on the days when I was awake at 7 or 8. I wouldn't intentionally get up to go to a 7 o'clock meeting.
Judith, it's 20 minutes.
Thank you. I found my way to a wonderful vision sponsor. And I will tell you, it wasn't instantaneous, but it was pretty fast that I saw the hand of God in this person. And it was like when they describe in the book, and if any of you remember the Tarzan movies from way back, I know it's showing my age, when they'd fall into quicksand. But there was a hand that pulled me out, and that was my sponsor. And I felt so, I don't know, so saved, so something. I can't even describe the word. That once I started working with her, everything became not necessarily familiar, but right for me. The words of this book, each and every step, the assignments, the reaching out, the coming to meetings and hearing others with similar or different stories. But underneath it all, we were all in pain and struggling from a hole in the soul and not knowing how to develop it. And what I came to realize is, Judith, you know that first word in the preface, we? You cannot do it alone. You will never be able to do it alone. If you want to do it alone, you know what you're going to have, which is yourself and detesting yourself and feeling sorry for yourself. So I worked through the steps in a very passionate way. The extra weight I had came off. Literally, it felt like almost one day to the next because I wasn't paying attention to my weight. I was paying attention to God through the steps. And to this day, about 2 months ago, for me, I gave up the scale, the weigh scale, you know, the number on the scale, and I gave up my food to God because someone had shared with me, if I get on a physical scale and I'm under what I think I should be, then I either say one or two things. Wow, maybe you can eat more. And if I don't say that, I say, oh, this feels really good. Maybe I should lose some more. So I don't win with that number. If I'm overweight from what I think, then I'm a bad girl. I'm doing something wrong. I'm a liar. And I should go to the woodshed. That's it. So, what am I gaining by going to that scale? I'm not saying this for anybody else. This is me. And my food, I have a beautiful food plan. I love my food. I wouldn't consider, in my right mind, with God, putting anything in this body that isn't going to enhance my whole life, particularly nutritionally and spiritually. The foods I used to eat would be like putting oil in my gas tank, and I will not do that. And God has gifted me, and I don't say this boastfully, with a healthy body. I'm a runner, not a fast runner, but I run half marathons, 10 milers. At my age, that's pretty cool. And I say to God, just use my legs, because I know you want me to run. I have no idea why I'm doing that. I have no idea how all of the pieces fit in this program. All I know is it works for me. And I am just so grateful, because if I wasn't a compulsive overeater who knew there was a solution and trusted God enough to give up what felt like an old filthy security blanket for a bright, fluffy, velvety covering of my higher power, I don't know. I know I wouldn't be in this meeting talking to you for sure. And I wouldn't be feeling and hoping that something I'm saying resonates. I will never leave this program. This program will be with me my entire life. And I do slip and I do fall, and I know my time is running out. And one of the defects that has come to light for me in the last week and a half is impulsivity. I became very aware a couple weeks ago that I made a decision because I had a thought. I didn't go to God. I didn't call one of you. I didn't even ask my family, including my dogs, if it would be a good decision. And we went through 10 days of insanity trying to foster a dog that was way beyond our capability. And to top it off, when I drove into my driveway, my husband was backing up, and I pushed on the horn of my car, wanting him to stop. And he didn't see me. And I froze. He hit my car. They're both damaged. That's okay. But I realized I wanted to blame him for not stopping. And then I realized, Judith, why didn't you back up? Why didn't you back up, baby? I froze. And that's the way I was in my life. I would freeze because I couldn't handle something that was going on. And instead of turning to God and doing what would be safe, I blamed the other person. And then the accident happened. So I'll end with, I'm backing it up and I'm breathing and I'm watching my impulsivity, because my impulsivity turns me into a compulsive overeater, not in the food, but in my whole demeanor. And that's not who God has created. God has created myself as well as you all as beautiful beings, just like we are. And I know there's a purpose, and I know there's a reason that I'm on this earth now, and that is to serve God, keep clean, and continue to trust, and to top it all off, be grateful to God for giving me the opportunity to be here tonight, and also to be serving in this community. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Judith. The beautiful share. Thank you.